The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Jeff Strissel always wanted to help others. It's a value that he learned from his parents and how he was raised. And that desire guided him to pursue ministry, which then led him to higher education. And I just love how just the dots connect, and it's so common in career paths. Now he's a professor of leadership, and he's found a space that he enjoys and a future that feels wide open for him. I just really enjoyed my time with Jeff. He's thought long and hard and deep about things like vocation and work and identity. He's the kind of conversation partner with whom I could easily just geek out with about work theory and just lose track of time. It's just so fun to theorize together. We dig into his career journey, talk about things like how to find a mentor, definitions of leadership, and how identity and work are related but need to be kept separate. I think there's some really good takeaways for everyone listening related to all of these ideas. Before we jump in, though, I just want to invite you to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening. Also, I'm offering semi-regular trainings around work and career that I'd love for you to attend. They're totally free. I cover things like landing your dream job, negotiating a raise, using LinkedIn to navigate your career transitions, and so much more, and it's all for free. You just have to be on the email list at themeaningmovement.com. You'll find a few opt-in boxes around the site. Jump in there. Would love to have you. This, of course, is the Meaning Movement podcast, a show about work worth doing. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland, and today with Jeff Strissel. Stay with us. Can you imagine waking up on Monday mornings excited about your day? Can you imagine loving being asked the question, "So, what do you do?" I created the Calling Course with a single goal in mind: to create a resource for finding what's next. The Calling Course is based on the process I developed through working with people around the big career transitions that we all go through. I went so far as to get a master's degree in psychology and culture to bring this concept to life, and I'd like to invite you to consider joining us. If you've ever felt stuck, if you've ever felt uncertain of what's next, if you've ever felt like you want more from your work, but you're not sure how to get it, I made this for you. Join us. Get started for free today with a mini course called 5 Clues to Your Calling at thecallingcourse.com. I'll see you there. Jeff, welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast. So excited to have you on today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
The question I always begin with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do?
Wow. Well, I think I like to start with the place that I began. I'm a Hoosier. So I was born in the Midwest or the Heartland, if that suits you better, and spent my whole childhood there. So lived in the same town and surrounded by corn and bean fields in Indiana. So a small town, and had a great experience, but certainly that shaped kind of where I came from. But then at that pivotal point between high school and college age, I really wanted to move into a college space and maybe move away from the cornfields and bean fields to get a different type of experience. So that took me to downtown Chicago, which of course couldn't be much different, and had a fantastic college experience, which I'm sure I'll touch on throughout. And then I've found myself kind of going between the country and the city and in between. So that's how I think about my story is really about location.
I love it. And what is your current location?
I'm currently located in Waco, Texas.
Right. All right. And what does work look like for you today or this week or this year?
Yes. So I'm currently serving as a postdoctoral teaching fellow, which is basically a non-fancy professor. I teach undergraduate students about leadership. People who work in higher education know that there's this whole ranking system that we operate in, but outside of higher education, nobody cares about that, which is probably all for the better. So it's simple enough to say I'm a young professor.
Yeah. So does non-fancy professor, does that mean that you have to do all the grunt work?
Well, I mean, I do teaching, and so I wouldn't want to characterize that as grunt work because it's such meaningful work and it's so fun in so many different ways. But it sometimes can feel like the working class because there are different types of professors. Some spend most of their time doing research. Some spend all of their time just teaching, which is a little bit more of what I do. And then some do a mix. They'll teach and they'll research and maybe even serve in administrative roles inside the college or university that they find themselves. So like I said, when you're inside higher education, just like any other field, there's much more nuance. But outside of the field, I probably just say I teach at a university.
I love it. And so let's just rewind some of this. I know that, you know, being inside higher education, there's, you know, a whole slew of options. I know that, you know, you may not have a crystal clear picture of where you're going, which path you're going to take. But I know that within higher education, typically people have some idea of whether they're trying to get a tenure track or, you know, a research position or whatever. What does it look like to, you know, what does your future look like as much as you could hope, you know, for it?
I guess moving forward, I would love to continue to engage the three buckets, if I could call it that. In higher ed, they talk about teaching, research, and service. And teaching, we all understand what that is, having gone through even elementary school. It's a continuation of that type of education. Research, again, just discovery, new ideas or new ways of viewing things. And I'm fascinated by that. I have a lot of fun doing that. And some of that includes publishing. And then the third is service, which in a university setting would involve a lot of administration. There's leading committees or holding a title. And those titles go all the way up to, of course, the presidency.
Yeah.
And so I've thought about, considered the potential of future job titles. But the longer I'm here, the longer I see what's within higher education and the potential there, the less discriminate I am, if I could say it that way. I really love all three buckets. And
that's great.
And so, yeah, I could find joy in any of those areas. And that makes me less picky about the job title that I pursue, which I think is, you know, useful.
Yeah.
If you want to do only one job, you've limited yourself in what you think you're going to find satisfaction in to maybe the maximum degree. But so I think that's been part of my experience as I pursued very specific things. I've found myself disappointed. And when I've backed up and asked, why do I want that specific role or those specific responsibilities? Or as Simon Sinek would say, ask my why, get to why. I found it much more fun and much more meaningful.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I answered your question specifically. Moving forward, just continue to make colleges and universities better for students, faculty, and staff.
Is that, you know, as close as possible to articulation of your why at this moment, making colleges and university better for students, faculty, and staff, as you said? Or is there some other mission statement that you kind of hold to?
No, I think that's probably a good mission statement, to make colleges and universities better for students, faculty, and staff, because the potential of higher education, and that's one institution to the whole enterprise of higher education, is so great. But I like to say that potential is humanity's greatest wasted resource.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
We could talk about the potential of an individual or the potential of an organization all day, but it's an aspiration. And so what are those aspirations? How do we articulate those? And then practically speaking, how can we pursue those aspirations and really push the boundaries of our potential?
I love it. I love it. Well, I definitely want to dig in So many things. More on that. Want to talk more about, you know, it's an interesting time for higher education. Want to get your thoughts on that. But before we even, and then also just more on leadership and your the topics that you know have expertise in. I think there's just so many great directions to go. But before we get there, first, I think it's just super, I think, important to hone in on just what you said about if you only want one job, you've limited yourself, and that can be a really frustrating and challenging mindset to mm-hmm. to approach work with. And I think I want to just highlight that before we move on, just because it's a big takeaway that I hope, you know, listeners can you know, hear and take to heart, because so often we have just maybe put blinders on a little bit and have very specific role, very specific career path that we have in mind, that we say, this is my calling, this is my dream job, this is my, you know, whatever it is, you know, whether it be a specific role, even some people I've, you know, talked to have specific role at a specific company, mm-hmm. But it can be really, there's so few levers that we can pull to actually get those positions. Whereas if you zoom out a little bit and find the theme or the why that connects a lot of the work that you do, it gives you a lot more flexibility and it's a lot more fun. So definitely. Before we move on, just wanted to kind of hit that one more time and highlight that for listeners. It's I think a big stuck point where people, yeah, get trapped a little bit.
Definitely.
Just to zoom in again to your work and your path, do you always consider yourself, you know, a professor, a teacher, an educator? Where did this come from?
Yeah, I think to touch on that point by way of my story, I knew early on in life that I wanted to help people. A lot of this was probably nurture. My parents were always helping somebody in some way, and I really respected that and wanted that to be part of who I was as well. Willing to take those privileges and blessings that I've been given through family and friends and share those with others. Kind of this kind of abundance mentality or a form of generosity and gratitude. And so I knew at some level, even if I couldn't have articulated it as a child or even in high school, I knew I wanted to help. Part of my backstory is that my faith was a big part of my upbringing. And so I thought, you know, to live out the best version of this faith element of my life and desire to help people, I'll go do that full time. We'll call it vocational ministry. And so I went to college, though, and redefined what that meant. Again, it's another way to think about helping people. And of course, helping is broad. You can help people in innumerable ways. And once I realized that, that was the beginning of the process of saying, I can do this in a lot of different spaces and find the satisfaction and fulfillment, and live out the values that I have, and not necessarily do it in a narrow space. That realization was happening at the same time that I realized how much fun college was. Certainly, as a student, making friends and having some newfound freedom and living in an internationally recognized city of Chicago, it was just tremendous. But then also being able to find myself in student leadership roles where I could be a leader and a helper to my peers, I just thought that was a blast. And I'm thinking specifically in two roles. One was as the president of the Activities Council. So pretty small school, and large institutions, I figured out later, have whole departments with full-time professionals that do a lot of this work. but on our campus, it was a student group with an advisor. And so we were given, I don't know, I want to say $20,000, which was a ton of money to me at the time, to basically create purposeful diversion on campus and help balance out some of the academic pursuits, which of course is important in college, but also have meaningful, like I say, diversion, social engagements on campus. Uh-huh. And so obviously that was a ton of fun, and spending somebody else's money was a ton of fun, but I was able to really build some great relationships with other students. You know, maybe most importantly, my now spouse, we met doing that same work together, but
love it.
Also to see the mentors that are there. And I think mentorship is a whole area that deserves a lot of dialogue and conversation. if any of us don't have meaningful mentors in our lives, then we're really lacking, I think, this kind of advisory board in making meaning about our life and our work and our purpose and direction. So I was so fortunate to have some mentors in my life. And essentially I said, because these mentors were in that college space, I thought, I want to be like them. And so I looked into how can I pursue education and earn a master's degree in student affairs. That title might be a little confusing. It's not about students having affairs, maritally. But a simple way to divide a college is academic affairs. It's all the in-class stuff, which is really important. But then student affairs, basically, it's everything outside of the classroom. Like I was talking about, campus events or intramurals or other student organizations, whatever it might be. And so I was really interested in that out-of-class experience to be able to serve as a mentor, like some great folks had been able to serve as mentors to me.
Yeah, I love it.
So I've been talking for a while. Is that a little bit where we're going?
Yeah, it totally does. Yeah, and it sounds like you fell in love with the college experience and want to be a part of facilitating that for other people. I mean, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I guess how has that shifted since you started down that path from, you know, where you began saying, I want to move into education, to where you are now and where you think about where you're going next?
I think as I started into higher education, I wanted to make a difference in individual students' lives. And that has been a driving force in my career, my work. But I think there's been another layer that's added as well. That is never to lose that passion for the transformational possibility of students' experience inside college, but also think about that from a leadership and organizational perspective, where I can be part of this organization that is at some point flawed. You know, organizations are just people coordinating themselves, but we can always do that better, and we always need to be sensitive to the students that are coming in. We know about generational studies that students born at particular times tend to have some shared experiences, some shared values, and those change over time, right? The silent generation or Gen X or millennials, and that list goes on. And so organizationally, how can institutions meet students where they're at and help them get where they need to go? To do that, they need to be stable, but they also need to be flexible. And historically, higher education has been inflexible. So there's some learning that needs to happen there.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. When you think about mentors, you mentioned just how you view mentors as some sort of an advisory board. I know that that's something that I think a lot of people often look for, long for in life. And I'm curious your thoughts on finding mentors. Where have you found mentors in your life, both, you know, professionally and outside of, you know, professional life? And if you have any thoughts to share with folks who might be in a place where, like, I know that a mentor is valuable, but I don't know where to find one.
Yes. Well, I empathize. I mean, I've lived out that feeling, that desire to be connected, that desire to essentially be affirmed, validated, that I have needs, desires, and someone's willing to meet me where I'm at. It can be challenging. You know, some environments are very competitive. You feel like you can't kind of take off your armor and admit that you're human. So I just say I've been so fortunate to have some great mentors who have reached out to me or been willing to connect with me. And so anyone who doesn't feel like they have that advisory board and those mentors, my heart goes out to them. Practical steps to take, I think, would just begin to look around nearby for who you want to be like. We know from identity studies, it's easiest if you're, for example, a person of color to find a mentor who's a person of color. I identify as a white male. Obviously, that's going to make it much easier to find a mentor who's a white male, because in one way or another, that person is more likely to see themselves in me. And so they're that much more willing, I think, initially to be helpful.
Yeah.
Alternatively, I think it is so important to go find people with very different experiences and perspectives that don't look and don't think anything like me, because I need that perspective. And there's the potential that I could offer something to them too, which It's a good transition to say, when you're going to do this process of mentor seeking, don't forget, don't underestimate that it is a mutual relationship. Mm. I really think that a healthy person and a healthy professional has kind of this three-tier fountain. At least that's the image I have in my mind, where you're in the middle of that fountain and someone is pouring into you from an overflow of what they have. And then from your overflow, if several people are pouring into you, then you can pour into others. It's not merely a taking process. So as someone seeking out mentorship, then consider mentoring one or two or more others. And then
I love that.
Pass it on and pay it forward.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that's so good. And I think that so often we think mostly about receiving much more so than giving. And I know as I get older, further along in my career, I know like, oh, I need to really be, you know, investing and giving more of what, you know, I think I've longed for at different times in my life, still long for today, in order even just for out of that pain of like, oh, I wish that I had had more mentors, you know, for the, earlier in my life, like I can be that for others. And I hope that listeners can take that challenge to heart as well. I'm curious, how do you define a mentor?
That's a great question. I don't know if I have a real pristine answer, but I'll loop back to what I said about those folks who I wanted to be like. So what is it about someone that I would love to emulate? Maybe not copycat, because if we're trying to be someone else, probably creates more problems than benefits. But if we can say, I really value, I respect, I appreciate this part of how you do things or what you do, your way of being in the world. Can I just spend time with you and begin to adopt that? And those could be really practical strategies. I love the way you communicate. How do you think about communication? Who are the people you read and the like? Now, that's taking for granted the fact that you might be able to get into a conversation with that person. And sometimes the barrier, the distance might feel great. But this is where I would say it's not bad, especially at first, to just take a scattershot approach. Think about the people that you really respect and like, and even if they feel out of reach, reach out to them. Because yes, you're going to have to be willing to absorb some rejection, but an amazing thing will happen in spite of that rejection. That person might still be really kind, or if not them, another person that, again, you believed was fully out of your reach as a mentor, as someone who might actually take the time to talk to you, which would communicate your intrinsic value, they might actually do that. You might actually build a relationship with this person that felt like a celebrity and can become a mentor. And that could be short term. You know, could I talk to you a couple times this year? Or that could become long term. Could I talk to you every couple months and bounce some things off of you?
I love that. I love that. I have some quite a few thoughts about, you know, about this. And I want to ask you first before I share, you know, I think something related to that.
Yeah.
You know, starting that relationship. What's the ask? And I want to know, how would you approach if there's someone that you wanted to be your mentor, or if you're giving advice to a listener who they have someone like, I want to learn, you know, this person is, you know, has things that I feel like I could learn from. Mm-hmm. How do they ask?
This is good. There's no formula per se, but in thinking about the times I've asked for mentors, I guess I've made a decision about whether that mentorship is explicit or implicit.
Yes.
Because that feels like a different ask. And maybe it's just my personality, but I've kind of gravitated more to the impersonal or implicit, I'm sorry, where I touch base with them. I communicate with them about a shared interest. So for example, if you're in an industry where you help people, just talk about that. If it's the same career path, like you see that they're a couple steps ahead in their career, but you're in the same field, that might be easy. If they're outside your field, then still just look for that shared interest or that shared value. And that could be as simple as you were part of a conference or you listened to their podcast and you say, you talked about this and it meant so much to me. And then so you're then connecting it to your experience. Following that up with, and so I would be so grateful if you could just give me a little bit of your time to talk about that thing. Give them an opportunity to help you. In some way, that can be difficult because you're kind of leading with your weakness. But again, I think whether that person is closely associated to your identity or disassociated with your identities, all of us have been in need and helped. And I think at some level, all of us want to be helpful, because yes, that's part of why we're here, to be in community, whether that's close community or more distant community, whether that's formal or informal. We all want to belong, and we all want to be help others belong as well.
I love that. That is such good advice, and it very much lines up with, you know, what I wanted to share about that process, which is my number one rule for finding a mentor is don't make it weird. Don't go to someone you've never spoken with and say, "Hey, will you be my mentor?" Because it's just such a big commitment. That it's also so ill-defined. I also feel like, you know, that maybe communicates more. Maybe, you know, I know you and I both have a faith background, and might be a little bit more common in those spheres. But I think, just like you said, having a specific ask, that you're asking something from them, you know, you're asking something from them, and something small, rather than, you know, this kind of broad, open-ended relationship, I think is a really good way to approach it. I think that in my life, I've found that, you know, I could tell the story that I've never had a mentor. I've never had someone who I've had that formal, explicit mentor relationship with, you know, who is older than me, leading me along, or whatever it might be. But the other story, and I think the better story to tell, is I've had tons of mentors. I've had many people in my life that I can go to for questions around certain things, whether those be, other professionals, people further along, parents of my friends, you know, like professors, like my landlord, like so many people that I've gone to at different points in my life when I needed guidance on certain things. And I think that that's a healthier way to look at it, is, you know, bringing intentionality to a relationship around a specific topic, and that we don't have to have like a clearly defined. I mean, I think that'd be wonderful if everyone had formalized mentor relationships, but it's just not always possible, not always available.
I agree. I think it'd be great to have formalized structures, but that's to ask for the commitment up front. It can scare people away. And that's why I went more toward the advisory council metaphor, where you're basically crowdsourcing some of your mentoring. Say, I don't have to ask someone for X amount of time, certainly their time and attention, because our time and our attention are our scarcest resource. You can't back up the clock. But again, you can be able to connect with someone and ask them about things that they care about. Like, we all love to talk about ourselves at some level, and we all love to talk about the things that we love, obviously. And so if you're asking about something that the person's passionate about, and you're asking about their experience, you're really tapping into two things that most of us are happy to talk about at some level.
I love it. So good. So as I think about your work and the steps, you know, you've taken along the way, I feel like there's kind of like this meta thing that's happened in your in your process, where it's like you're doing the thing, and then you're also having to teach on the thing at the same time, right? That like you're leading at a higher education institution, and you're teaching on leadership. I know offline you'd mentioned that as you're kind of sorting out your themes of vocation, you found yourself teaching on concepts related to vocation.
Yes.
I would love to kind of dig into some of those topics. And I'd love to start first with leadership. I know that that's a kind of an emphasis for you in your teaching. How do you talk about leadership? What does that word mean?
That is such a great question. Leadership means so many things. It's one of the reasons we see leadership books published every year, because there is no one definition of leadership. And I actually think that's one of the most intriguing and potentially useful parts of leadership. It's certainly one of the most confusing as well. But I guess, I have a couple things. First, I would say I've always been intrigued by notions of leadership. As long as I can remember, I had a desire to be a leader, and that led me to trying to answer, what does that mean? And why do I want to be a leader? Which led me to, what is leadership? Just as you've asked, trying to define it. And I find that there are many definitions and there are many theories about leadership. And so jumping like back and forth between those just highlights the reality that you can know everything about leadership. That doesn't make you a great leader. And I've met folks who couldn't tell you what their leadership philosophy is, but I would probably follow them to the ends of the earth, because they embody leadership, even if they can't quite articulate it in an academic way. And I think both are really, really good.
Yeah. Maybe another way to ask a similar question is, what are characteristics of, in your opinion, characteristics of a good or strong leader?
I think strong leaders have the ability to operate at a couple different levels. And probably the most important, certainly at first, is how to lead themselves. In many ways, this comes around the notion of clarity. This is where I love the work that you do, in how do you make meaning for yourself about why are you here and why do you work the job that you work? What do you want to do?
Yeah,
that takes some self-awareness. It takes reflection. And I think that great leaders are self-aware. They're self-reflective. But they're also, you know, if you consider yourself a leader, the anecdote is if you turn around and see that nobody's following you, you're not actually a leader. Yes. And the way that you can cultivate a following, if you want to look at it that way, is also being really connected to the people that you're with. Certainly, this matters a lot where you're located, right? If you're in a military context, it's very rigid and defined. Other contexts, much less so. And both work, and both can work really, really well. But you have to be sensitive to that environment and connected to the people that you're with. And so there's a negotiation process there. And I think that the leaders who can negotiate that, given the context and given the people they're working with, as well as, again, staying kind of centered in who they are, man, they're the ones who can kind of nail it at those three different levels.
I love it. I love it. I think of leadership having, a lot to do with influence, the ability to influence and move people around you.
Definitely.
I'm curious for people who are listening, and I think you've already, you know, articulated some of it. It's so hard to put your finger on.
Yeah.
We know it when you see it. but you also do teach these skills.
Yes.
Where should someone start? If someone's like, I want to improve my leadership ability, I want to become more of a leader in my workplace or in my whatever context they're in. What are a couple things that they could practically do? Just some takeaways, you know, from this part of our conversation.
Well, I guess a takeaway could go back to identify the leaders that you really respect and go seek out the things that they've, you know, often they've written a book or they have some materials available to you. Some of these are free, some of these cost money, but again, that's where you emulate people who you already respect as a leader. Practically, any investment that a person makes in self-awareness is going to pay huge dividends. Who am I? Why am I here? What do I want to accomplish? You know, practical ways to do this are just look back on your story and say, when are the times that I felt most alive?
Yeah.
When are the times that I've enjoyed being in a group? Because I realize some of us are more extroverted and energized by being in groups of people. We'd like to think we're probably suffering more in the COVID era. But even for introverts, we all, again, want to belong. And so what are those times where we felt really connected to people and really alive? And look for threads, look for themes. That can be instructive. Yeah, so I think that's
great.
That's a place to start, at least.
I love it. I love it. And those are very similar places to where I would send people if they're asking questions about vocation and meaning and purpose. And I'm curious for you how you think about overlap, both where, I guess, where those areas overlap and where they, what's the opposite of overlap, diverge from each other, you know, leadership and vocation.
Well, again, part of leadership is self-leadership. So a definition of leadership is working toward a common goal, you know, exercising influence in a group toward a common goal. So if you can't identify where you are, start there. And then if you can't identify where you want to go, then that's another important piece. Because if you have those two data points, as it were, and this could be internally in terms of who am I and what am I about? This could be vocationally or professionally. What is the work that I'm doing and what is the work that I want to do? Then you can begin to reverse engineer some of that from where do you want to get to how do I get there from here? And certainly practical steps like, oh, I need X amount of money or I need X type of experience or I need this particular credentialing potentially, but also centering on this idea of authenticity and what you value, what you prioritize so that you can line up the things you say you care about with your behaviors. And that alignment, that authenticity is empowering. It's empowering because it creates clarity for yourself and you can focus your attention on what you want to do moving forward. And it also gives you permission to let go of all the other great things that are out there, but don't align at the center of your value system. You can't do everything. So this reflection allows you to focus on what you can do.
I love it. That's fantastic. I'm curious, as we've hit on the idea of identity, you know, a couple of times here, and I think that this moment in the conversation is kind of right adjacent to that piece. I know that that's something that you have some thoughts about, the intersections, you know, how helpful, when it's helpful, maybe when it's not helpful, to think about work as an expression of identity, or at least job and career as an expression of your identity. And I don't know exactly where the question is here, except I just feel like I really want to hear you talk about that.
Okay. Well, let me just jump in then, because I don't have a clear path forward except to say that there are reasons that we're doing whatever work we're doing. So again, that goes back to where are we and why are we here? Some of us are in a job because it's paying the bills. And that is good. That's worthwhile. We need to keep the lights on. But then you can begin to craft a game plan for, okay, I'm going to continue to pay the bills, but ways that I want to grow and develop so I can transition into work that feels more like play or feels more meaningful. That how does the saying go? If you do what you love, you don't work another day in your life.
Yep,
it's exactly. Cliche, but there's a reality there that's caught up in that cliche. And so I think that that is a great direction to go. The other thing is, in America, our work identity is so wrapped up in who we are, even in the language that we use. I kind of provided more nuance earlier in the conversation, but if people asked me, what are you, professionally speaking, I would say I'm a teacher or I'm a professor. Mm. And that's really useful and it's helpful. And I enjoy that identity in part because it has some benefits, right? If I say I'm a professor, people help affirm that role. Oh, cool. You know, eyebrows raise and that's really interesting, or I'm impressed or something like that, which makes me feel good. But the important piece underlying that is, I think, got to be an awareness that I am not a professor. Yes, I'm serving in the role as a professor, but that is not by definition who I am.
Yep.
Now, maybe I am a teacher. That is intrinsic in my personality, but that doesn't mean I'm getting paid to teach. I can be a teacher even if I work in a so-called blue-collar job. I can be a teacher even if I drive a bus. I can teach people things all the time, and I don't need permission or a salary to do that.
Yes.
So that's where that authenticity really should shine through, to be clear about, this is when I'm talking about who I am as a person, and being able to distinguish that from what I happen to be doing in terms of my work. Mm. And I know for some that's easier because maybe they changed careers or they've had experiences where they've been forced to do that work. But particularly for folks who have worked so hard to get to that place, it might mean a lot to give up that identity per se. Or if they've done something for 10, 20, 30 years, it's so difficult to disentangle what they've been paid to do with who they are as an individual.
Yeah. I love that. It is so, so, so good and so important. And I think it relates back to where we are at the beginning of this conversation about, you know, if you only want one job, you've limited yourself. But I think that as we're talking about it, it's the kind of thing that, like, if for some reason tomorrow you woke up and you were no longer allowed to be a professor, you were no longer, you know, you lost your job and there was no roles in higher education that would welcome you, it would be one thing if you thought of that as your identity, that you know that Jeff is a professor and that's the only thing that's meaningful for you in life. But it's a different thing when you think of yourself, yes, you are a teacher, you're something about communicating, about helping, about transmitting a knowledge into other people, helping them develop, like that is a meaningful activity for you. And then if you use that as the guiding principle, then you can find a lot of different places to put that. Even just to go back even into your story, that you started out with a, you know, vocational ministry was your goal. And I could see how that could it's very similar. It's very adjacent to what you do today. And I say all of that just for listeners to say it's really helpful if you can zoom out from, if you have this one thing that might be your destiny or your dream or your calling, to zoom out a little bit from that, to recognize that a job is an expression of your identity, but it is not your full identity. Would you agree with that, Jeff?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can see how tempting it is to avoid that important work, to call into question what you do, why you do it, if things are going really well. Part of that is influenced by the research that I've done on people who've lost a job. And we don't need to go too far into that, but I do think if I wanted to be snarky with someone who didn't seem willing to do that inner work in terms of separating their job functions and their job title from who they are and what they value and why they want to be the way they are in the world, then I would encourage them to go get fired. Or maybe more realistically, pretend you got fired. What would you feel and experience? And why would you experience those emotions? It probably has something to do with the way that you're perhaps too greatly rooting your identity in that job title or in that salary or in, fill in the blank. Because at some point we're probably all going to retire. And that's, I think, one of the crises that folks face closer to the end of life. Okay, now what do I do with my time and how can I make a difference? Actually, that's a great time to go find mentors, folks who have retired within the last year. They still want to feel relevant, and that's a perfect time to go get a ton of great wisdom and insight from folks who are yearning to still use that wisdom and insight that they've cultivated over the decades. But anyway.
I love it. Yeah. Well, I think what you said there is so important, that usually we don't start this conversation with ourselves around vocation, meaning, purpose, why am I here, until we're forced into it, whether it be from a job loss, a lot of times from a job loss, sometimes it's from other things, death, divorce, disease, a pandemic,
right?
All of those things. Why is that?
That is such a great question. And I'm quick to just blame culture. We went through not that long ago the quote, Great Recession. We're currently going through some economic strain, obviously. Decades ago, we had the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And so my mind jumps back to that, where in many ways that was worse than we've experienced today on the whole. I'm not talking about individual experiences, but where whole portions of society were on the streets, in food lines, desperate and struggling for help. At the same time, we had kind of instilled in the American culture, the American work ethic, that if you're not working, you're not contributing to America. And so some of that, I think, still lingers, where if you're not working, then you're not a productive member of society, that somehow our economic value correlates to our human value. And so we're kind of enculturated. We're prone to that type of thinking. Likewise, when we find something that we really enjoy doing, it's so much easier to continue to enjoy that, continue to grow and develop. Or if it's even a difficult competitive environment, to continue to try to have an edge. And so it's, again, that kind of time and attention, because it's so limited. Even if we would like to believe that it's important to us, it still doesn't make our top 10 list of things to do, because it's hard work and it takes time. And we might be afraid or uncomfortable with the conclusions that we come to through those exercises.
Yeah. Or afraid to find out what those conclusions might be. So good. So good. Well, just as we move towards wrapping up, I feel like we could go on all day about these things, because you and I both love these topics.
Absolutely.
I'm curious for you, if I had this post that I said to people, when they subscribe to my email list, where I invite people to imagine that there's a room full of people that are here to hear you speak. There's another way I could ask this question, but if you have 30 seconds to say one thing, even just one sentence, like, what is your message? And I think another way to ask that question is, you know, Tim Ferriss on his podcast asked a similar question of, if you could have a billboard that the whole world would see, what would you put on that billboard? Which is probably a simpler way to ask the question.
I mean, it still feels like a hard question. I'm a person of more words, not fewer words.
Yes.
Certainly it would have something to do with leadership and meaning and purpose, but it might be some version of be the leader today that you want to be, you know, a version of that kind of be the change that you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
I think everyone is a leader and everyone is a follower.
Yeah.
So the question I would put to everyone is, what type of leader follower do you want to be and why? That I think That's we can great. Spend our whole life trying to A, answer/figure out and B, embody, kind of grow into.
That's good. That's really good. Well, Jeff, this has been just so, so fun.
Likewise.
Oh, I want to talk more about all of that, but I can't. I know we need to wrap up.
Yes.
Thank you so much for jumping on and digging in with me. If people are resonating with you and in your work, do you have anything specific you'd like to invite people to?
I guess the simplest way would be through Twitter. You can just send me a message. It's at Jeff Stritzel, and that's JeffStrietzel. Just shoot me a message and connect that way. Yeah, I love to talk. I love to hear people's stories. And so I'm happy just to connect for the sake of connecting. I liked it. I tell my students all the time throughout the course of any semester, make friends wherever you go, because it's worth it, whatever it is. I just think we're all doing life. We all have our strengths and our challenges. And the more we can do that together, the more enjoyable and meaningful it is. So reach out, and particularly, obviously, I love talking about leadership and service. I'm particularly interested in those who have faced failures of some kind, failure broadly defined. But, you know, we talked about job loss, and I think if there's one area I think I could be helpful, that might be it. Just to have conversations with folks who have lost a job, because I think we have this unfortunate and detrimental stigma attached to losing our job, when in reality, many of the folks that I talk to say it is really the best thing that happened to me. In the rearview mirror, of course. In the moment.
Of course, yeah. Painful. Painful in the moment.
But because of that, the magic of meaning, we can use that difficulty, that pain, as a catalyst for growth.
That's fantastic. Jeff, I don't know, you know, you mentioned writing earlier, but I don't know if you've thought about writing a book around that, but that's a fantastic hook. So
thank you.
I think there's worth continuing to explore.
Thank you.
I love it. I love it. Thank you again, Jeff. This has been so much fun. Really, really fun to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much, Jeff. So fun to have you here with us. If you would like to find links to Jeff's work and many things we talked about, I have a great article about finding a mentor on the Meaning Movement. You can find links in the show notes at themeaningmovement.com/Jeff. While you're there, drop your email address into any of the opt-in boxes around the site to get more of the Meaning Movement for free, including the trainings that I have been hosting every now and then that I talked about at the top of the show. And that's it. Thanks so much for listening. Hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Leave a rating and review if you haven't done so yet. Please, it would mean so much to me. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. Our music is by Tom Moore. We'll be back with you in another 2 weeks.
I'm Andrea, founder of a boutique handbag brand, Andy, and this is why I switched to Shopify. I tried 3 other platforms prior to Shopify, and I remember my breaking point was when I would try to make one little change and my entire site would go down. Shopify made it really easy for me to shift everything over and hit the ground running. I was able to migrate my products and all of my customer information over.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Go to shopify.com/listen to take your business to the next level today.